So I know we have a lot to do in this paper also, right? So you get us started. I know you had a list of things there. So I'm doing several things. I'm just filling up the blank spaces in the evaluation section, like filling up the tables and which are still remaining and some graphs. So I'm filling up those. Plus I'm addressing the comments on section 4. I've addressed a whole bunch of comments that's still a little bit remaining, and also I'm updating the related work section with a new work.
Right.
Okay, so the reminders you've not started working on the reminders yet?
No, I started. Now all the reminders I haven't erased. I pressed, but I haven't erased.
Yeah, so that's good. I think it's good that you didn't erase them. It's better to leave them in, but somehow mark them. Maybe cross them out. You know how to do that? Strike them out. Yeah. And so whoever has added those reminder can verify that it's addressed and then get rid of it. Okay, so do you want to go over the high level points of the evaluation? What is the message that you
evaluation
heard?
First we go to the benchmark, the details of the benchmark.
Mm-hmm.
Then we directly jump to the modeling accuracy.
Mm-hmm.
On describing modeling accuracy, we first describe what is the percentage error, what is the error metric here.
Mm-hmm.
Plus what are the training set and the testing set for each benchmark. Then I directly go to the modeling accuracy for a single benchmark.
Right. So here I see the benchmark description, but where is the discussion on the metrics? I don't see that.
Oh, that goes on the. I mean, there are always in each benchmark. I said that which is the application performance metric.
Right, but the accuracy metrics and
accuracy metric is I described in 5.2. 5.1 has to be removed. That's why I put a placeholder on that.
But the 5.2 is the accuracy for a single global model.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if the accuracy metrics deserve a separate paragraph, because those metrics will be reused in each of
error
those
metrics. I put it, I place it in section 4.
Oh.
Write a formula. Something minus something to do with something minus.
Okay, okay. I put it in words.
Where is that?
I have to check it.
Section 4 is about the modeling itself, right?
Yeah, but in order to convey what is the error, I put what is our non-error metric.
Here in the section 4, you already have the results in these tables.
These are for each benchmark.
Oh, this is for...
each parameter.
For each parameter. And here, this is just... this is just an example, right?
This is just an example.
Okay. Okay, that's fine, I guess. So what are our primary error metrics here, or primary metrics of accuracy, and is there a performance question also here?
Performance question?
Yeah, for instance, how much time does it take to train the ANN?
Do any timing error or any no discussion has been there? Let me put that.
So there are two questions then. One, is the timing analysis important at all? And we have to discuss that.
It is important.
If it is important, then we have to defend why we don't do it.
I mean, we don't need a graph, but we need to somehow say that
I mean, I'm not saying that a specific kind of discussion, but some discussion.
Some discussion is important. I remember the every time people ask that. Mm-hmm. How much time do you need for training?
Right. So if it is important, then we need to have those numbers somehow.
Okay.
Right. I mean, just for completeness, maybe it doesn't matter at all. Maybe in the end we find that the numbers are
but if we put our numbers, that could be a little misleading. If we say that we run for 2 days or 1.5 days for each benchmark, I don't know.
Oh, no.
Not for the benchmark, but the neural network, the learning curve.
Oh, the learning curve? You're not talking about the data collection thing?
No.
Oh, you're
talking about the, because we are assuming that you got the data somehow.
Okay, we have the data, and how do we proceed to the...
Right. But even that first part, we do have to specify, you know, that we had to train, we had to collect data over a certain period of time. We had to specify that.
Mm-hmm.
For each of these benchmarks where you have a description, you have to say how many points were collected.
That I said, that training point and testing result.
Right. But also how long the time to collect all this data points. I think we have to specify that.
That will depend on how much time the application takes, right? That difference, that varies depending on the runtime of the application.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But okay, so here's the question. Do we need to specify how much time it took to collect all these points or not?
People ask it.
Right. So even that's important. Although I started off by thinking about the time to train the ANN models, but I think this time is also important. Maybe not as critical as the ANN training, because the ANN training could potentially be used in the future in an online setting where you had to really retrain quickly and adapt and so on.
That's two metrics. Yeah. So don't you have a sensitivity curve? I had how many data points? How many data for previous, right? Some of you just did. It's a matter of one minute max, or 2 minutes, to train a model.
Regardless of the size of the training set?
It's sort of linear.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of very linear, the linear dependency. But at most, the data points I have collected, the maximum, let's say, to 200 training points,
mm-hmm.
it didn't take more than a minute.
Okay. So can you do the following, that arrange all the benchmarks,
mm-hmm.
in a sequence,
mm-hmm.
and in the sequence of how many training points,
okay,
and then plot on the y-axis the time to train each of those models. So that should be a linear function, right?
That is a linear function.
That should be a linear function. So do that. We can have one chart for that. And about the sub-modeling and so on, can we estimate the time, how much time it takes to create the sub-model?
Sub-model is, in automated scenario, it shouldn't take more than a few minutes.
Right, but the problem is that when we are writing a paper like this, we have to be exact in terms of minutes, seconds, and even microseconds maybe, right? So even if you're doing some sort of estimation, we have to say that this is the time that we took for 59 training points, right?
Okay.
We cannot be a hand waving for, especially for a paper like this, to say, okay, it takes approximately a few minutes for a few points, right? We cannot say that, because that doesn't mean a whole lot, right? People are trying to get a sense for, okay, you did 59 points, but what if my training set is 159? How much time do I expect to take, right? Do I take 10 minutes or do I take 50 minutes? So there has to be some benefit of saying what you're saying, right?
Okay.
For someone who wants to use the same word. So if you can arrange, here's approximately what I'm saying. We can sort benchmarks by number of training points.
Okay.
We have benchmark 1, benchmark 2, and so on. And somehow we had maybe specify the number of training points.
A bar?
Yeah, so you could have a bar, but you probably will need multiple such bars, right? One for each type of model. This is ANN Global. This one is top model. Here is multi resolution and so on.
Okay.
For completeness, you can, and this is of course on the y axis you have
sine.
Seconds or minutes, and whatever is more reasonable to you.
So that's one thing which, you know, he would need to come up with. Okay. And in terms of the, going back to the discussion on the metrics themselves, if the discussion is in section 4,
the error, the percentage error,
I
should put a formula there. Do we have anything that shows the relationship between the number of training points and the increased?
Yeah.
That could be used to explain the matter of the data collection, please. The data collection depends on the number of data points.
So you combine those two discussions, you mean?
Somehow we can cover that question with that table.
This is different though. This is how the accuracy is changing with respect to the training data set length.
The size of the training data set.
Size of training data, but I think percentage.
But the data collection time is dependent on the training data set size too.
Data collection time depends on the training data.
So
we can combine here.
Yeah, you have to offer discussion on data collection time. When you discuss the training time, you also want to discuss the data collection time, and you can refer back to this table.
So you're saying justify that most of the training time, the training time is proportional to the number of training points, and how many training points we need is the minimum number of training points is dependent on that other graph.
Right. Can be decided by the mean based on the accuracy that he needs and the time that he has for the data collection.
Okay.
So you had a very nice graph in the previous paper. Number of training points,
the time. Yeah, I had it, but I removed it in the final paper, the final version.
That's perfect.
So, if you already have a graph, we can reuse it here. Number of training points versus modeling time. Yeah, I had a graph. It was a completely near graph.
It was removed from the final paper?
It was removed from the final paper.
But that graph is only for the training time,
not
for the data collection time.
Data
collection, I mean, data collection more depends on the application. So data collection,
yes,
probably what is important is how much data is required.
Yeah, that's correct. The size of the training data.
Size of the training data.
How many data points you want?
Correct. I think that graph actually talks about the size of the training data. I believe it was like x axis was the number of training data and the y axis was the time or the
trend
time.
Okay, so I remember that we had when we had a discussion on organizing the evaluation section, said that there was one section on accuracy, the other section on sensitivity, and the third section on overhead. So whatever we are talking about here is for that third section, which is overhead.
Overhead.
Training time overhead, data collection overhead, and maybe some of it goes into sensitivity too, which is how many training points you need to get accuracy. So once you talk about that, then you can talk about the overheads. For this much training data points, then we would need so much time. And
okay.
All right. So this is the section, evaluation section is not organized correctly then. Because you have all of these guys at the same level, single global model. So shouldn't you have like a 5.1 accuracy,
a 5.2, which is sensitivity study, and a 5.3, which is overhead. And then within 5.1, you have all of these individual techniques, right? So organize that. So what is the high-level message here? You have single global model. What are you trying to say here with this data?
It's just how much. It's just informative, this section, this table. This is how many training point, testing point we used.
But is this specific to the single global model?
Yeah.
Or is it applied to all these other?
It's applied to all the models.
So why is it in here, inside the single global models? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah? So move it out.
Okay.
And introduce all of that first before you go into the accuracy discussion.
Okay.
Because that's a preface.
So that's common to everybody.
Yeah. Sorry. Okay. Yeah. Just from an organization standpoint, it would make more sense. But what is the message in this subsection?
The message in subsection is how it just compares. It's just how the modeling accuracy of a single global model and what are its comparisons with regression models.
No, that's not the message. That's what you did maybe. But the message is what? I mean, what is the conclusion of this?
Conclusion is single model is not enough, so you need further.
Exactly, because you have to tie this message to the to the section where you talked about all this into the different model. What is
the section? I think
for 4.10. Like how we are moving from one model to another model.
In 4.3.1.
Yeah. So you have to tie that experimental section to that method and
to the following one.
Gradually moving forward, we do the single global model. In the single global model, in this scenario, we are getting the low data, but in this scenario, we are getting high data. Okay, for this one, we have to move on to the next one. Okay, then we'll do the next one.
Okay.
Then we'll say, okay, this is the first, this is the next one, and then we'll move on to the next one. You have to, at the end of each section of single global model, you have to have one paragraph, a pretty small paragraph, saying, okay, what's the message? What's the pros, what's the cons?
Okay.
And then move on to the next one.
And there has to be a connection and a story.
Yeah.
Right. You have to say, okay, why are we talking about this, and what is the goal? Think about that, and then that, you know, how does this connect to the next thing we were talking about?
Okay.
Right. So then the message will be clear, and you will focus on conveying that. Okay. So do we have enough data to convey that message in here?
Yeah.
Okay. So then, put all your creative energies into creating a message and telling the story.
Okay.
So the next thing is multi-resolution modeling. Now I understand that this whole story already happened before, right, in section 4.
Yes.
So it's like just a rerun of that.
Rerun of that.
So you don't have to belabor the same points over and over again. So you can just, that's what Kaushik was saying, point back to the previous one, previous section and say,
put the results.
Put the results and say, okay, this substantiates or confirms what we had discussed earlier, and therefore it is important to go on to more detailed models, and we start with the multi-resolution model.
Okay.
And then here again, you don't have to repeat the same story again, which we had in section 4.
Okay.
But just without repeating the story, still make a story here.
Okay.
By just referring back, right?
Okay.
So it's interesting and motivating for someone to read this. So here, in what is the message in multi-resolution modeling?
That you can reduce the accuracy, or reduce the error percentage for some benchmarks.
Mm.
Why?
Because of the skewed error distribution.
Skewed error distribution.
Okay, so are you going to present the skewed error distribution here?
I present it already in the section 4 to present the story.
But do you present it for all the benchmarks or?
No, because only two benchmarks have skewed distribution. Not all the benchmarks. You cannot do multi-resolution for every benchmark.
Okay, what are you telling the reader here?
that.
No, don't explain to me. You're explaining to the reader. What is the message in the multi-resolution model?
Multi-resolution model is that it's a scenario. If you find a scenario where the errors are skewed towards a specific region of the output range, then go into multi-resolution, do what I described in the paper, and then if you do that, you can find better accuracy.
Right. So that's you're sort of telling the reader to do something without any supporting data. So the goal of the evaluation section is to convey that message with supporting data. So, okay, here are all the benchmarks we did, and are there defined clusters for these benchmarks? And here are two benchmarks where there are defined clusters, and in those cases, multi-resolution modeling can help. And when we did multi-resolution modeling, this was the outcome.
Okay.
Right? So think about, yes, what you're saying may make perfect sense to you, but a reader, especially a SOSP PC member, is there with a, you know, he's there to fight with you. So you have to come with all the ammunition. And say, okay, here's the data. That's why I'm saying, I'm not saying just because I think so, but here's the data, and I actually did it, and this is the result.
Yeah, so that's the figure 4, actually.
Here?
Yeah, but the errors are skewed towards the lower output region.
Right, but that's just motivating multi-resolution with one benchmark.
One benchmark.
What I'm saying is that you have to do that for every benchmark,
okay,
but not show the clustering, maybe not show the clustering results. Probably you don't have space for that. But show, okay, if you took this approach, here's how many clusters you get, and in some cases the clusters are not well defined. And then you have to figure out a way to show that data. Maybe in a table where you have number of clusters, I don't know, big, you know, you have to start thinking about this creatively. Right? How do I show this information? How many clusters? Whether multi-resolution model applies or not, what is the data I need to support that conclusion? That multi-resolution model does not work with this. What are you basing that on? Present that data.
Okay.
Right? And then say, okay, multi-resolution model does work for benchmark A and B. And we apply multi-resolution model to both benchmarks. And here are the accuracy improvements.
But you don't need four graphs, because you can just have one graph and superimpose to it, like a different sign for four benchmarks.
Might get a little bit
clumsy?
Well, cluttered, I think. I think it may be hard to distinguish.
Can you submit color?
No. We can submit color, but they say that you should use color very sparingly.
Okay.
Maybe I have to reduce the size of the graph.
But it could, I mean, this is just one way, right? The other way is that, okay, where are the clusters? You can say how many clusters overlap, right? Those are just numbers. You can put that in a table, right?
Okay.
And those kinds of information, what intuitively you're able to figure this out, right? But to connect this to your intuition and your reasoning, you're going through some steps. What are the numbers associated with those steps? Can you put those in a table, right? So think along those lines. Don't be afraid to create new metrics and say, okay, number of clusters, or the number of clusters that overlap. Create new metrics if you want, because they help you in going towards a conclusion or a message. Okay so that's multi-resolution modeling. And then sub-modeling, what do you have here?
Sub-modeling is the...
How is it different than multi-resolution modeling, and how is the, what is the message here?
Message here is that first, if you don't have satisfiable accuracy with global model, and if you find that your errors are not skewed towards a specific region, or
point to examples, because you have six benchmarks. Say, okay, here are the benchmarks where multi-resolution model does not work.
Okay.
And why it doesn't work, and why does sub-modeling work? Present all the intermediate data that motivate that sub-modeling is the right thing to do in that benchmark.
Okay.
you have a very nice table here, wherever it is, with all the different modeling techniques and accuracy, which is great, but that's not enough. You have to tell a story for how you got from here to there, right? And
okay.
Because you did a lot of work, you had to really utilize and extract as much as you can out of it. Yeah. Okay, and then submodeling is the end of the techniques.
End of the techniques.
Where is the, did we discuss regression techniques anywhere?
I just introduced in the global model, a brief, very brief.
I think I had to split that up into two. One is regression models and the other is the NN models.
Where should I, because regression I also used in some models also.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah, so probably it's in a common discussion in the experimental section to compare with our NN, we also compared with linear regression.
What about multi-resolution? There also you have linear regression.
I didn't use it.
You
can, but I did.
Okay, if I have to be picky, you know what I will say, right?
I mean, running that, it's not.
Hmm.
It's not a big deal. But I'm thinking about it because we are a specific space crunch. How much information should we put?
Space crunch can be resolved in many different ways.
Okay.
Right? But at this point, and in the end, we might decide that that goes away. Because removing anything else is a much bigger damage than removing that. Right? But I think at this point, we are not in a state where we can evaluate for space. Right? In fact, I see that there are a lot of descriptions that can be made more concise. There's a lot of long paragraphs where we go into more detail than we possibly need to in the initial section. So we could possibly reclaim space there. But if you're doing linear regression, you probably should do for everyone. More importantly, you have to organize even within this subsection better. Paragraph with bold header, say, using linear regression and using artificial neural networks.
Okay.
For each of these.
Even I could not agree with that you have done linear regression for the for this one and this one.
Remember that no reviewer, or at least unless they have a lot of free time with them, is going to read sentence by sentence through your entire paper. They will just go and look for keywords and latch onto it and start reading parts. Right?
Okay.
So you had to pull their attention to, if you don't say it explicitly,
mm-hmm.
they probably will not get it.
Okay.
And so put the linear regression in there with a bold header and say, okay, for each of these techniques, we also use linear regression apart from artificial neural networks. And here's the now here's the difference. So whatever, then think of the message now. The message becomes different. Because earlier the message that we were discussing were only related to the artificial neural networks. If the same message applies to both, then you had to come up with that message as well.
Okay.
Can't we have this one? Can we have it one single large table instead of multiple such tables?
Just
catch up the tables.
Yeah.
And,
I agree.
Yeah,
that's
it. I would love to have this way, one large table like this or something like that.
Just in one page?
Full of data. That will give all the data in one shot and also show the rigor that you have done all the combination.
Mm.
Like a metric, kind of thing.
Mm. I think that's a good idea. I mean, we might have to flip this over or do it this way where the reviewer has to flip the page to read it.
Yeah.
Either way is fine. I think right now this is over the limb.
I think you have to go the landscape on that particular page.
Yeah, if you flip this and you have benchmarks listed here and all the techniques on the columns, then you could possibly fit everything in a page.
So, for example, if you look at the table 9, there is no, you're saying that's a single model. Then table 9 and table 11 look similar. But that's for the submodel, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then if you have the, and it's a very similar thing, then if you have, And I'm sure you have the modularization model, and you can have the
modularization. One of the problems is that some of the benchmarks I cannot do materialization models, so those will be blank.
Well, they put not applicable. Yeah.
And explain the why. That will also give us to anyone a clear picture of how much work is in that.
I think that's a great idea. I think it would be very useful to have everything in one big table.
Okay.
For that, you might have to flip this table around. With LaTeX, that's extremely painful, I know. Flipping tables in LaTeX means copying this way and pasting this way, which is a mess.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
How do you create tables in LaTeX, right? With ampersand and so on. If you had to flip that into a column, then you cannot just cut and paste this way.
Is it possible to just change the orientation of a single page?
I guess you can.
Yeah, I think in the page we'll have tables, but we'll have space for other maybe graphs.
Yeah, that would be another option. Flipping for one. Put all the tables and other two more graphs.
So yeah, that's maybe faster and easier.
Yeah.
So if you flip this over and put it this way and attach the second table next to it, it's a little bit weird because you have these benchmark names appearing multiple times.
Uh-huh.
Right? That's the problem, I see, if you do it that way. If you just attach the next table, which is on the next page, to the previous one, you have the same benchmarks repeating again. Benchmark names.
It's actually good because it's a three-dimensional thing. Because you have the submodel, global model, submodel, multi-resolution. Under each of them, you have neural network, regression L, regression Q, regression I. Four of them. Then for under each of them, you have all the benchmarks.
What if you flip it over, like, this way, and your benchmarks are all here. Benchmark 1, benchmark 2, benchmark 3. You have only one instance of each of these names, and then here you have, I don't know, submodeling. Submodeling is divided into two, which is linear regression.
Yeah. That may be still better, actually.
Something like this. Right. Does that mean flipping columns and rows?
Yeah. In a table.
In a table, which for a table like this will take half an hour.
But there is another way. Excel to LaTeX package and add in on the Excel 10, 2010. You just click on the Excel to LaTeX and the table gets created from the Excel document. And you can just break out of the description.
Nice. You have all these tricks that you're hiding from us.
So Excel to LaTeX.
It's free? Yeah. It's free?
It's free, yeah. Well, you had to buy Office.
Yeah.
And you had to buy Excel.
So that would be easier.
And then people will have to compare this way instead of this way. Because you can only compare columns in this kind of a configuration.
So how do you flip the text?
Flipping text is easy.
Okay. So it's not, I don't have to flip everything on the page. It's just flipping the table. Okay. It's just rotating the table.
Okay. This is one way, but then in this way, you might be able to fit everything in one column.
One column for the paper.
Yes.
Only five benchmarks, so it's just one column. Yeah. We can save a whole bunch of space.
Well, I don't know if you can save space, but you can certainly fit a lot.
You'll have to get all of these guys
switched over. But what about the median standard deviation?
Oh, there are other four metrics.
So each benchmark has multiple numbers.
Even four numbers.
Yeah. Just subdivide.
I think he needs the full pitch.
Full pitch.
Like the way he has done. Probably the same will be like this way, different, something like this.
Yeah.
That's bigger.
Mm. Both columns.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So work on that. Or something better than this, easier, which combines everything into one. Okay, so then the next one, which is measure of confidence. So the once again, the message here is that for certain benchmarks, we show that the multi-resolution models do not address those benchmarks, and why? Okay, you have to say why. Because the clusters are all distributed, or I don't know what the thing is here. But you have to then say for these benchmarks, here are the relevant pieces of information. The reason why multi-resolution model doesn't apply is because this number is this. Like for instance, number of clusters is high, or whatever it is, but present that number.
Okay.
And then so you can have the submodeling motivation, and then present the accuracy with the submodel.
Okay,
so then this other section is measure of confidence.
So you need the 5.5 session. A little bit distracting, isn't it? What is the message?
Yeah, what is the message?
The message is that the table, the because for to let's say administrator come up with a point, perfect allocation, and he wants to measure the he wants to predict the performance under that allocation. So what I was saying that having just a table is not enough. I mean, it's just all those metrics like average, median, or standard deviation across a whole bunch of data sets. So it doesn't represent
parameter space.
It's about the total parameter space. So to get how confident the accuracy level at that particular allocation value or around that allocation value, you need some more information. So that's with the heat map.
So for the heat map, what I would recommend is to just focus on one benchmark and illustrate what the administrator will do with one benchmark.
I agree.
Right?
But these heat maps I generated before is for the single model.
Okay.
So maybe we have to do it for this.
My problem is that we are so constant on the space. The heat map discussion is so
will have to be small.
So little that it will be confusing.
So,
maybe we
had to specify somehow the measure of confidence. For us, instead of specifying entire heat maps, we can.
What is the measure of confidence?
But here, that one heat map is really small, like this.
But then you have three heat maps at least, right? For three different latency values, low, medium, and high. This for entire benchmark.
Entire benchmark.
Okay, so we can do that. I think we can.
But there is no measure of actually.
The measurement is the intensity of the cell.
If it's white, then it's less error prone. If it's darker, it's higher error prone.
So Kaushik, the message is that although we have all these percentage, average errors and so on, that's an average number. What if you have to do prediction in this range of the parameter space?
Okay.
How much confidence can you have on your prediction?
Okay.
So that's what we are indicating here. So you might not want to give much value to a prediction which has a high error component to it. So that's, I agree, that's like a bonus, but it's something that would potentially add value.
It's a multi-dimensional space.
Yeah, I think we talked about this some time back. We did in our previous paper, but we haven't come up with anything that's better. This is not that great. So if we can come up with something better, I think it would be valuable. So 3D pieces, 3D information, I don't know. Actually four dimensions. The intensity is another dimension.
Yeah, basically drawing is drawing, and this is and how we are doing the four dimension.
Intensity of the cell. If
if it's darker or lighter.
Yeah, that I understand.
Mm.
That's error.
Mm.
Then you have the two axes.
Three axes. There are three axes. One is memory, CPU, and latency.
Memory, CPU, and latency. This one you cannot do a data chip
map. Okay. Can you do three dimension heat map? You have a three dimension graph and use the color.
What's the
right? Use the intensity to see similar to this, but
mm.
that you put all the three dimensions, yeah, it's a three dimension graph.
Mm.
I've seen graphs like that.
That's one way. Other way is that make, because say for example, this is your three, this is your three dimensional table.
Mm.
Other way is make a three dimensional table like that.
Uh-huh.
And plot, do the heat map in a single heat map.
Mm. Yeah. I mean in a single 2D.
Single 2D table.
Mm.
Because you're what you're talking about is IO latency.
Mm.
Memory and the CPU.
Hmm.
So you can buy memory may be here, memory, IO latency may be here, maybe the CPU here, and each of the cell represents their values.
Hmm. So you have something like this.
Then the figure will be much more compact actually. It will be much more compact in figure. And I can often tell you that how to draw the figure.
Okay.
So
it's a first, split it up into maybe coarse grain, and then split it up into fine grain, something like this.
Yeah.
So this is, let's say, memory 128, memory 512, and memory 2G. Right? And then each of these in here, CPU or latency, or latency, whatever.
Yeah.
So you could do it this way, yeah.
That's the one.
The challenge, or actually the trick would be to pick this guy carefully. So if latency has less of an impact than memory,
mm-hmm.
then you probably want to pick memory for the coarse grain and latency for the fine grain.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so even with the average intensity, you can figure out what's going on. You could do something like this. I think that might be a nice heat map tool.
And what you can do is, I think you can do that in Excel actually. What you can do is, you can put the
ice fresh.
Put the number.
Okay.
Put the number in Excel, and then Excel there is a color coding. Once you go do the color, select the cells and do the color coding, it will do the rest of work for you automatically.
Mm.
Then once you have the once
Sajib is now thinking, you know. I wish Kaushik were my advisor and he did not like me to do this GNU plot heat map.
I do a lot of LaTeX also. I like my own LaTeX. Don't take it wrong.
No, this is not LaTeX. I mean, it's a very the GNU plot.
Yeah, I use GNU plot.
Yeah, heat map file.
And save it as an EPS?
Yeah, and take that will be an Excel sheet. Then you have to take the screenshot and then save it as an EPS.
Yeah, so I defer to you for these tricks.
Yeah, that's what I have done. That doesn't mean that that's the best or best way of doing it.
It's much better than what he's doing, I'm sure.
In that way, the sales, you don't need any gap or anything like that across the multiple heat maps. It looks like a contiguous, one contiguous box where you have multiple color, multiple density of the color.
Okay, yeah, then that's very attractive. So let's do that. Okay, so
look at the color coding. That's
right. Color coding. Then, I mean, instead of doing for each of these guys,
just do one.
Yeah, because that will take some time, I guess, to produce that heat map.
Mm-hmm.
And you probably don't have a whole lot of time anyway.
And for single models, I think it's better to do it for our best of the model, like someone.
Probably the best model.
Best model.
Yeah.
Because I have this kind of graph where I compare how close the output with the predicted for the subset for the sum model.
Oh,
For the best model or?
For the best model, which is the sum model in our case.
Okay. And you put everything in one chart, or you have four or six different charts, or seven? How many benchmarks do you have?
Five benchmarks.
I thought we had six.
No, last benchmark I tried it.
TPCC is not working?
No, it's working, but it's too long. We cannot do it right now.
Oh, I see. It's taking a long time. Maybe we can think about it for the next version. Okay, so then that's the, what do we call that? That's called the measure of confidence. And then where is the sensitivity?
Sensitivity is effective training reaction. That would be sensitivity, yes.
Sensitivity.
That I have for global model again. So.
Okay, so you have to do all of this for the other. See, once we resolve the accuracy and say, okay, for this submodel, whatever is actually uniformly accurate across all the benchmarks, and for the rest of our evaluation, we focus on that. Okay, and then we don't have to recreate each model over and over again for each of this analysis. So we can just stick to that one technique.
One technique. Well,
is there a one technique which works for all the, or almost well?
The submodel is better than all the others.
Okay, so we should just go with that.
Submodel. Maybe I have to do the 11 then.
Even more than multi-resolution model for, or multi-resolution model is better for something.
Let me see. 15 to 94.
Where is the submodeling errors? This is with submodeling?
This is with submodeling, yes.
And the table has exactly the same columns. I don't see submodeling anywhere.
No. This is for submodeling.
The table 11 is, the complete table 11 is submodeling.
By using submodeling.
Table 11 and table 9 is exactly the same.
I see, okay. So this, so here you have, but what, where is the regression models? Sorry, the multi-resolution model.
Multi-resolution model is table 10.
Oh, here?
Yeah.
Oh, where's the rest of the benchmarks?
It should be not applicable, I have to write, because those are not applicable.
Oh, I see. So you have to figure out how to convey that message with
yeah.
data.
Yeah.
Right? So in this table, you can present those additional two, maybe one or two columns which say number of clusters or cluster overlap, whatever it is in the same table, you can specify that. And then you can have all the benchmarks and say not applicable or whatever it is. So here, what's going on with Rubis browsing and bidding?
I think browsing is better in terms of average or median. The median accuracy is... No, submodeling is a lot better for the median accuracy.
Mm.
But why is it?
Yeah, exactly. So... What's happening here?
Because submodeling essentially divides it into multiple clusters. Maybe at least two, but more than two.
Maybe, or do we know? I mean, do we
for
know
these benchmarks?
Yeah.
We know it for one benchmark is four and one benchmark is two.
I see. Okay, and then for other benchmarks, it's different number.
Different numbers. Look at the clustering technique, I mean.
So in the submodeling, you also present that information somehow? Is it how many clusters and...
No. Maybe a table with clusters overlap information or everything would be good.
Yeah.
I would like to remove this graph because these graphs are confusing and doesn't convey the information. It's better to just put a table.
I agree. Yeah, I think that makes more sense. Now that we...
It's
I mean, I thought about how to better represent this information, and I couldn't come up with anything, which is why you didn't hear from me with respect to that email.
I think this table will be concise. You have space.
Mm.
Plus some overlap, like intersection kind of thing.
Okay.
So that would convey the message.
Okay, let's do that. And we need explanation for why submodeling does better even for bidding and browsing.
Okay. Okay. Yes, I can find it.
And here you need an explanation for why multi-resolution model works with bidding and browsing.
Mm-hmm.
Why it can be done and why it cannot be done with the others.
Okay.
I guess the bidding is the request per second is much slower.
Bidding is much lower.
The request per second is much lower than the browsing. Because bidding is updating the request.
Mm-hmm.
And browsing is just select statement.
Mm-hmm.
That's the select statement, any transaction with the select statement is much faster. So request per second is much higher in case of browsing.
Mm-hmm.
And output request per second is much lower in case of bidding. And that's basically it's reflecting in the error percentage.
I still can't make the connection between what you said and the why the error percentage is higher or lower. So if the request per second is higher, the error is lower. Is that your
the request per second is higher? Request per second is higher. The error is probably high. But at least for our browsing, our bidding, that's what I'm saying. The difference between our browsing and our bidding is in terms of this particular case scenario is that one.
Mm-hmm.
The request per second is higher and lower.
I see. It could just be that the bidding is a much more complex workload because it does I/O, it does some other things maybe,
right.
Or it does more operations. I don't know. I mean, don't those things figure? I mean,
but in terms of accuracy, bidding is better.
I know, but I'm saying that bidding may be a more complex behavior or a less complex behavior. I'm just thinking about beyond just request per second.
It's a more complex one, but mm-hmm. more complex should reduce the error. It cannot be increase the error. It should be more difficult.
But they are so close anyway that to me it's 8 versus 10%.
No, 106.11%. No, okay.
Where are you?
15.95% versus 70.18.
Oh, you're looking at the submodeling. Submodeling, okay.
Yes.
Yeah, I was looking at the multi resolution.
Even in the global modeling, it's 68.57 versus 19.52. So quite a bit of difference exists.
I see. Okay. The multi-resolution modeling, there is not much difference between these two.
No.
That's interesting. I wonder why. Okay. So then.
And probably that's what the advantage will come off.
Hmm.
Multi-resolution modeling. It can address a lot of wide variety of applications.
And one of the interesting points in multi-resolution model is that 90% is lower than the submodels.
Oh. Hmm. For all the, well, for these two benchmarks?
For these two benchmarks, where it is possible to do.
Hmm. That's interesting.
Because that means
hmm.
in the lower output region, because
hmm.
of the so low value,
hmm.
the any prediction is not well enough. Because you're basically dealing with a very small value, so your percentage accuracy is going to be higher. But why multi-resolution is bigger? Because we specifically focus on that region and build the model there, not just simple clustering based on output.
Yeah, and that ties back to the multi-resolution.
Those are the kinds of nice nuggets we need to extract and put in the paper.
Yeah.
So
there are some nice insights. It just need to be articulated.
Okay, so next one is effect of training data set, and again we probably want to focus on one modeling technique for all the benchmarks.
This one needs a lot of run. Can I do for 20%, 40%, 80% to vary the length?
Okay, so maybe what you can do is work on everything first and then come to this.
Yeah.
Okay, so in that's the evaluation section. Is there anything else in here? I think there was something about overhead that we talked about,
overhead.
But there's nothing
overhead
in the paper.
There will be another graph where that graph
mm-hmm.
going there.
Okay. All right, that's good. So coming back to the other sections, so I think there are some reminders that need to be addressed. And the second section I'm rewriting at this point. Section 2. Yeah.
I put some other approaches and I'm constantly updating it as I'm reading a paper or taking a summary of the paper. I'm constantly.
That's fine because the only parts that I'm currently modifying are 2.2.
2.3.1.
No, 2.2.
2.2?
2.3.1 is gone. 2.2 is the machine learning is ANN, right? That's where we will talk about our previous work.
Yeah, and we are moving the comparison CDIOs
to the other one,
to section 3.
Right, so this is only related work, the way
background
I see it.
And related work.
Yeah, just background and related work, the way I see it. So we will discuss our own previous work as related work.
Yeah.
In the third person.
So I was thinking that we put as like somebody's work, as our previous work,
mm-hmm.
that this guy did that.
Yeah.
But I think that that representation and this representation have so much similarity.
So what? That's okay. That's how the double-blind review, the writing is done. That you refer to your own work in the third person. So you mean, are we borrowing sentences directly from the other paper?
Not sentences, but kind of graphs and...
Graphs or...
And the same kind of linear regression technique.
So what?
So
we
need at the end, if someone reads the paper and someone knows the thing, they will know from where it is coming up.
Okay. Just they might be able to guess based on how the paper is written, but we did our job. That's the main thing.
Yeah. Just do our best.
Yeah.
To make it anonymous.
Okay. So it's not the.
Yeah. They cannot.
Anybody can refer.
Yeah. SOSP does not mandate that there will be no way of figuring out who the authors of the paper are. It's just that you have to do your best to. And there are some best practices, especially when it comes to referring to your own work, and we follow those best practices.
Okay. I would suggest just break section 2 into two subsections. Background and related work. So
background and related work.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because this several subsections are too small. I can combine them into a single.
And then have just paragraph headers.
Yeah.
For each of those.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm.
Okay. Well, I won't touch anything until Sajid. The only thing that I'm modifying is 2.2, so I don't know how we'll probably conflict on that.
I think you can start with section 2. I'll go to the evaluation section and do my part there.
Do one thing. Whatever you have committed first.
I committed everything. So
you committed already?
Yeah, already. It's the latest version.
Okay, including your changes to the related work.
Including the related work and the beat text file.
Okay. Okay, so then we're probably okay. Alright, so section 3 parameters.
You're putting the CDIOs discussion in 3.3.
Yeah, so yeah, 3 is what I'll work on next. After
3.
Yeah. And what about the introduction? I think you added some stuff here to the introduction, right?
Very little. Yeah, but I think the contribution needs to be rewritten. We shouldn't put too much focus on CDIOs and that need to be go away. We should take it as a standalone work.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. I think that's important.
We don't need to contrast with too much of the previous.
Why not?
Yeah, we have to contrast to all the existing work.
Mm-hmm.
No, instead of saying the specific notion about CDIOs and VM latency, we could say that we found more accurate parameters to deal with resource allocation. more robust.
Right, right. Yeah, I agree. I think it has to be more abstract.
Mm.
So I don't know, maybe Kaushik or Ming can take a shot at making that change, doing a revision of the
I would rather wait Sajiv and try to reorganize this for bullets, because I don't want to count the things that I don't believe are contributions, but you believe are contributions.
Okay, let me just focus on the contribution right
now. Just this for...
rewrite the contribution and then forward.
Okay, alright, that's fine. Okay, so anything else?
I think we need to... we need to have the discussion of the usability. How we expect a cloud consumer or service provider use this approach. Because we say we believe this is useful to both cloud providers and consumers.
Mm.
There are many implications on the usability of this, like how we make sure that the profiling is done on the same kind of hardware as the real hosting hardware. For the consumer, do not have control of where this where his application, his virtual machine is going to run.
Mm.
And also this issue, if the cloud resource is not homogeneous, the virtual machine has to migrate it, you know, those kind of things.
Where does that go? I mean, that could go in either the background section or in a discussion section at the end of the paper.
I think it's maybe section 3 or no. Otherwise,
no,
what the
section 2 is a discussion. I think we could add something in the discussion section, the individual.
Yeah, maybe discussion section.
At the end.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I
think
it's
about that then, probably.
Yeah.
At the end.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Something, I think what you're saying makes a lot of sense. So if you can maybe come up with an initial draft of those bullets,
okay.
I think that would be
the conclusion section is there. So
where is the discussion section?
Probably
we
instead
don't have
of related work,
discussion,
it's a discussion.
Okay.
And then we have a few bulletized paragraphs.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that would be a very valuable addition.
Mm-hmm.
We may answer many questions that reviewers might have.
Plus, I think discussion, we need to say that we are looking at a static version of the application, not the dynamic version of the application.
Yes, but so we had to go beyond that though, right? I mean, we had to discuss what is the implication of that, of just looking at the static version. Does it mean that there is no way we can look at the dynamic version? Is none of this useful for dynamic version?
No, I'm not saying that. But.
No, but if you're not saying that, you have to say that you're not saying that in the paper. Right? So my goal is to make sure that we convey the entire message and not just part of it. Right?
Okay.
So if we are not saying that, then we have to connect it to how we could possibly use this work in the dynamic scenario. What are the changes, what are the challenges that need to be addressed to utilize something like this.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's a good point, which gets added to Ming's bullets of usability.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Alright, so let's work on these things, and we can maybe, I mean, if people are available, we can meet again on Thursday.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I will
be like
Friday, but it's early. I think it's
8 p.m.
7:59. 8 p.m.
It's
yesterday. Yes. So I will first rewrite the contribution and send it to you, and then Ming can start the discussion and go back to the introduction session.
Okay.
And I will working on the evaluation.
And I'm working on 2 and 3 for the time. Okay. All right, great. Thank you. We'll get Ajay involved at some point. I think today he'll be done with his meeting.